Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, greetings. May the peace that only God has be with you. All right, this is author Nazim Abdul-Rashid coming at you again with the series Improving, Repairing, and Preparing for Marriages. And this is part 22. I know it's hard to believe, yes, but it's part 22. There's a lot to cover when you're talking about what it takes to have a happy, stable, happy, joyous, fun-filled marriage. Yes, and like I've always said, you know, look, I've been doing it myself too, okay? You know, I'm on my fourth one right now, but this is my fourth and final adventure, I call it. Usually I have a queen now, for sure. However, before, I was listening to the imam, well, for the Muslims, you know, our religious leaders are called imams, but, you know, Christians and Jews out there, you know, we're listening to our religious leaders, and sometimes when they talk about getting married, they make you feel so small and insignificant if you are single. They make you feel like you're even a sinner or a detriment to society sometimes, and you feel out of place. So what do? You hurry up and get married, you know, and you find a sister or a sister, you find a brother who thinks the same way, you're feeling that you're being lashed out, admonished, beat up if you are not married. So what do? You get married. So you say, now we are now accepted in the community. Because, you know, just like the church community, every community or group has its norms, community standards, community self-esteem, group self-esteem, however way you want to label it. And in order to be in those groups, we feel we have to fit in. We have to abide by the rules, you see? Or you're looked upon as being an outsider, you know, agitator, just someone who doesn't belong here even, you see? Yeah. So, I did it myself. I did the same thing myself. You know, I heard the talks and I got married and so forth, found out that we had nothing in common. Nothing in common. Nothing in common. So it was like a round peg going in a square hole, you know? And we both subscribed to the same religion, so that wasn't the case. We just weren't matched up. You know, the Christians call it equally yoked, you know? Weren't matched up. So it's very important that you look at that, you know, what it takes. That's why I'm doing this series. You know, I talk about, you know, I say in the media reports, reality shows, and among friends, you hear a great deal about weddings. That's the emphasis. The wedding day, the feelings, the glow, the friends, the gowns, the suits, the wedding venue, the biggest diamond ring, the fun, the excitement. Huh? You don't hear anything about what it takes to have a committed, long-lasting, healthy, happy, fun-filled marriage. You don't hear about the joy attained from a spiritually connected relationship. You don't hear about how commitment carries over the challenging hurdles, and how loving the spirit inside connects you to each other, no matter how the exterior changes over time, and it will change over time. You see? Yeah, for sure. If you say I'd say, dear, you know, that nose of yours just turned me on, and I'm just so in love with that shape of nose and all that. I'm just making something up, you know. And after a while, it changes. You know, if that was what you're attached to, you fell out of love. You don't even like the person anymore. You're attached to a certain body part, you know. But I'm telling you, when you commit yourself to that spirit inside, you love that, then no matter what the exterior says, you'll still be connected. Because you aren't really connected. I mean, you like those things. Of course, we love our eye candy. We like to be stimulated and all that by the exterior. However, we're connected, spiritually connected to the person. That's different, you see? Yeah. So you don't hear a lot of talk about that. And I know that some imams who are, again, you know, in our religion, they call imams, who spoke that way, they have changed their tune also. They realize that it is not producing healthy, wonderful marriages. It's not doing it. They see that. They see divorces happening over and over and over and over again. So a lot of them have changed their tune also. See, instead of just, you know, jumping the broom, so to speak, they're looking at what it really takes. It's more than just both of you reading the same scripture or both of you praying on the same rug or whatever. It's more than that. Okay, so that's why we're doing this series now, this installment 22. So I encourage everybody to go back in the archives and go to blogtalkradio.com/emailalfred and scroll down till you see the title, Improving, Repairing, and Preparing for Marriages, and download them all. It's all free. This can go right into your hard drive. You can burn CDs. You can put into your iPod, I guess, and have it. So you can hear these programs over and over and over. Because I'm telling you, shows like this are best heard repetitively. I've heard, you know, talks myself, religious talks, discussions, lectures, where after the fourth or fifth or eighth time hearing the lecture, I finally got it. The light bulb came on. I said, man, that was some good stuff right there. But I didn't get it from the first, several times I listened to it. So that's why it's important to listen to these programs several times. You know, you can listen to it while you're, you know, doing the dishes or doing housework or something, and just let it go through you. Because you'll find something in there that will affect you directly, and you'll say, man, I never thought of it like that. I'm going to revisit my own mindset about marriages. Yeah. Especially if you find yourself having repeated episodes. I knew one brother who get married every single year. After the second or third time, I stopped going. I said, brother, I'm not going to any more of your weddings. You know, I'm not going to do that. You know, so we have to decide what we really want. See, and on this program, I always talk about our childhood experiences because that is where it all started. Who's telling you what's right and what's wrong as far as relationships are concerned? And I say this all the time. You go to school for many, many, many years. Once you want to learn a certain profession, doctor, lawyer, anything, engineer, anything, IT tech, anything, a lot of years. Research, dissertations, library, a lot of years, interviewing people, internship. But how many hours, weeks, days, months, years do you spend learning what it takes to have a spiritually connected marriage? Yeah. Isn't that important? Yes. So since we can all feel after we ask ourselves that it is important, where do you go to get that? Well, right now we're doing installment 22. You can get that information right here. Right here. By the way, for those of you who don't know, I have over 20 years in mental health and drug counseling fields. Yes, and I went through a drug recovery program, 12-step program. Matter of fact, in my book, I have a whole program around addiction recovery called 12 Principles of Recovery. I've actually talked about that as it relates to marriages in my previous, several segments. Yeah, for sure. By the way, Reconnected, how do you get that? Barnes & Noble has it. Amazon has it. And if you have the Nook or the Kindle, you can get it that way too. My website, www.cloudsofabundance.com. Cloudsofabundance.com. Email NR. bookclub@gmail.com, nrbookclub@gmail.com, okay? All right, very good. Now, last week we talked about a new chapter because I'm reading and expounding on the chapters in the book as it relates to marriage so we can get a good idea of how this book can help create new standards within you so that you will have some kind of way of referencing this inside your mind as to what you should do or not do. Okay? Absolutely. Absolutely. All right? Now we're talking about, it's going to be a long series on, we're going to do now on identifying and managing emotions. Again, identifying and managing emotions. All right? Very, very important. As you know, besides the high divorce, matter of fact, one of the reasons we have a high divorce rate is because people are beating one another up. Yeah, yeah. they're beating one another up, literally kicking you under the bus. You know, and so we have so many physical and emotional abuse going on because people don't have an idea what's going on within them regarding their own emotions. All right? Again, we have to go back to childhood. So a lot of times in this series, I talk about how we were brought up. Who told us what as to what is okay, not okay. You know, what's okay for a man to do and not for a man to do. You know, we learn these things. And sisters the same way. We learn from our mothers. If our mothers were doormats, and they got kicked around all the time by the husband, young sister, you see that? Even though you don't like it, a part of you accepts that as being okay and normal. So what do? You grow up and get a man who does the same thing. You don't like it, but some kind of way inside, you're attracted toward the man who abuses you, or takes advantage of you. So we have to look at those things. And I talked about that quite a bit, how we identify those character defects, how to kick them out, and then how to replace them with the positive counterpart. Okay? We did that in some other series. So that's why I encourage everybody to listen to the previous episodes. All right? Now, last week, we talked about learning the ABC of behavior, which is A, antecedent, is what came before. What subtle, sometimes unconscious signs are you experiencing or demonstrating that comes before the behavior? B is for behavior. So that when you get those antecedent signs, you'll know that something's about to happen. You need to do something now. All right? And I'll go over that right now. Matter of fact, like sweating palms, heart rate increasing, breathing rhythm starting to change, hair starting to tingle, nerves in the spine getting agitated, jaw tightening, your fists clenching. Now, these things, you know, happen without you thinking about it. Because, you know, say you're speaking to your husband and he's saying something that's getting on your last nerves, and this thing starts happening, you know, heart rate increasing. And you're focused on what he's saying, not on how your body is reacting. See, that's what's happening, you see. So I'm giving you this so you will be more in touch with your body, so you can see how your body is changing, and then do something about it before it goes to the next level. The next level is behavior. Okay? Yeah, for sure. You're actually doing something. Now, C stands for consequences. What happened as a result of the behavior? Too many times when adults intervene in escalating arguments or fighting, they don't go far enough when they ask the youth, for instance, you're asking the young ones, what happened here? Who started it? What they get in these sometimes public settings with other youth present is a response that the troublemaking youth is comfortable in verbalizing. He or she doesn't feel safe talking about what the real antecedent is. They don't know. Unless the adult knows how to ask the right questions in the right safe environment. Now, like I said before, I always talk about, you know, parenting, because, you know, we get these behaviors from our childhood. You see, so don't think I'm getting off the topic here, all right? Okay. All right, so we got to know what's going on. And, you know, in adult situations, when the consequence, you've done it, you know, you've hurt one another. And one kind of classic scene, you know, I hear about is pretty awful. But say that, you know, the husband, you know, beats the wife up. Here she is with, you know, black eye or a swollen jaw, whatever. Then he says, oh, he's so sorry. He loves her and said, oh, yeah, I don't know why I did that. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. All right? Now, hold tight. Gets worse. He says, dear, if you just hadn't have done that, this would never happen. Now, why do you do these things? I love you so much, but you do these things to me and cause me to hurt you like that. You know I don't want to do that. You know I don't want to beat you up or hurt you or do anything. I love you, but you keep doing these things. You're pressing the buttons, and you're doing it like that intentionally. Why do you do that, dear? Pretty awful. Pretty awful. But this happens. You know, she forgives him, and then what happens? It happens again. So we have to find some kind of way of breaking the cycle. So that's why we're talking about this, okay? Be in touch with the antecedents, all right? Now, we also talked about the three brains, okay? Most of your brain is based on emotions and instinct. Did you know that? You have the mammalian, hot-blooded creature, like the hot-blooded creatures, and the reptilian, cold blood creatures. So we have most of our brain that mimics, you know, those animals, the hot blooded creatures and the cold blooded creatures. So if we don't do anything, if we don't consciously go to the front, all right, which is where the cerebral cortex is, some say the prefrontal cortex, where the thinking center is, hang on the back, you're going to react from an emotional position. Okay? Yeah. You know, you'll do what you've always done. You know, if you come through the portal of, you know, transformation between, you know, the old, you know, street self to now your righteous self, let's say, consciously go to the front and stay there consciously, hold on to the front, you'll react, respond from the old emotional self you once were, the dark self, lower self. Yeah, we have a lower self and a higher self, okay? All right, so that's why we have to live a conscious life. We can't live day by day, in and out, not consciously framing our day, framing how we're going to feel, framing what we're going to say, huh? How we interact with people. We can't go like that. What happens soon? Something happens. You might be on the road and somebody cuts you off. All of a sudden, road rage. You've got that spirit. You become possessed. Then you want to, you know, tailgate the next person or who knows, or pull a gun out and shoot. You see? So that's why we have to understand how the brain works and where we should be consciously. If you don't live a conscious life, what are you going to live? An unconscious life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's where rage lives. Hatred, revenge. Yeah. Back in the other two-thirds of the brain. You see? So that's why we have to live a conscious life. All right, very important. So you got that? The ABC, antecedent behavior consequence. Very important. Very, very important. Because we got, you know, if not, you know, probably all of us came from a dysfunctional family situation. So we have built-in behaviors of dysfunction. You see, we don't relate healthy in a healthy way if we don't change ourselves consciously. So you're going to do that. You're going to do awful things to yourself and to your mate. So this is why it's very important to understand how to live a conscious life. So then what happens? You do this kind of thing, and then you meet a sister or a sister, you meet a brother who's also doing the same thing, and then you two get married. Now you can start birthing healthy behaviors because now both of you are healthy. Yeah, for sure. That's how it works. So last week I talked about how to breathe, to calm yourself down, how to breathe correctly, using the diaphragm, expanding your diaphragm in your back, you know, like a balloon, so that you can get the maximum amount of air in. Then when you exhale slowly, you automatically can calm down. Your heart rate will slow down. Your voice will slow down. And you can hear what the other person is really saying and also hear how you are receiving it, okay? You can pay attention when you breathe and get rid of that little angry clutter that's there, okay? So that was last week. Okay, now, this week we're going to talk about how the brain works, all right? I started that already. Now, we have the limbic section of the brain, okay? When we're stressed and negativity becomes the dominant factor in how you're going to think and act, we are using the limbic part or the primitive part of the brain, all right? The more specific, responsible part there is called the amygdala. Amygdala. Mm-hmm. It is this amygdala that emotionally hijacks the brain, and this is where psychotic rage originates. Yeah, for sure. There is no rationality being done in that area. Emotionality rules in this space. Violent reactions and mindless, enraging behavior originates in this part of the brain. Okay? Now, got that, okay? It's really important to understand that. So this is where all that happens. All that happens right there, okay? So now, after that, we have the neocortex, okay, the neocortex. Now, when we can breathe deeply, relaxing that follows brings our thinking to the neocortex part of the brain, okay, where rational thought takes place. Hear me now. See, I mentioned before, we got the small part in the front, small part there. But you see, you have to constantly go there. It's kind of like having I've talked about this before, a slant board, you know, where if you don't do anything, you'll fall right down into the two-thirds, the limbic section and so forth, the primitive part of the brain. But you have to consciously go up, yeah, to where the neocortex is, okay? So when you can breathe deeply, relaxing that follows brings our thinking to the neocortex part of the brain where rational thought takes place. Follow me now. Cortex system, frontal lobe, and with that system, in the front part is the prefrontal lobes, right? The prefrontal lobes. In the prefrontal lobes, there are the right side and the left side. One of the duties of the left lobe is to act as a neural thermostat, regulating unpleasant emotions. Now, the right prefrontal lobe harbors the negative emotions while the left one keeps them in check. Okay? The left prefrontal lobe, in short, seems to be part of a neural circuit that can switch off or at least dampen down all but the strongest negative surges of emotion. All right? If the amygdala often acts as an emergency trigger, the left prefrontal lobe appears to be part of the brain's off switch for disturbing emotion. The amygdala proposes, the prefrontal lobe disposes. Did y'all get that? Whew. Yeah, for sure. Like I said before, go to the blogtalkradio.com/Imam Alfred, scroll down and download this part 22 into your hard drive and just play it back. Just take the mouse and like rewinding, you know, so you can hear this over and over and over until you get it. It's important to get it, okay? All right. Catching ourselves before that blinding rage takes control is critical because when that emotion is present, sometimes we are unable to think, to breathe, or do mathematical problems or anything. Yeah, because you're possessed. You're possessed then, okay? We are controlled at that point by our blind emotions, and that is when psychotic episodes can happen. When a person assaults, rapes, fights, or kills someone without consciously being aware of his or her actions. This is why we have to be consciously aware of our mindsets, feelings, and our body parts. See, very, very important to understand that. Yeah, because when that blinding rage happens, that's it. You don't have your mind anymore. You see? Yeah, religious folks says the devil's got it now. You're possessed. Yeah, that's why they even, you know, get away with, you know, murder in court system sometimes, because they say he was not responsible for his actions. He didn't have his own mind. And really, at that point, you don't. Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, are you getting this? Yeah, by the way, I forgot to mention, if you want to ask a question or be a part of this timely discussion, just hit number one on your telephone, okay? And I'll see it and bring you in, okay? Very important. All right? All right, now, how do we counter this? I talked about breathing in the beginning of the show. Also, the technique called progressive muscle relaxation. This is so important to talk about because a lot of us have these impulses. You want to hurt somebody, hurt something. Cannot have a happy marriage if you hold on to this kind of reality inside. No, 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 it's not going to work. No. So this guy named Dr. Edmund Jacobson originated the work, you know, back in 1938. Yeah, progressive relaxation. And this, like deep breathing, is so very important to kind of clean the slate so you don't have clutter on you, emotional clutter from the day before or even that same day when you come home, you know. So progressive relaxation is so important. So I'm going to explain it here a little bit and see if you can start incorporating that into your daily routine. Again, I say, you know, if I'm talking too fast, you know, which I do a lot of times, Just go in and download this, and you can hear it over and over and over at your own rate. Okay, very important. Okay, now it is through this process that we can become acutely aware of our various muscles, how they feel when they are in a peaceful, relaxed mode, and how they feel when they are in a stress mode. Now, according to his theory, the muscles actually record anxiety-provoking and events. A buildup of muscle tension then increases the actual feelings of anxiety. Yeah. So, Dr. Jacobson deducted that the opposite is also true. If the muscles relax, then physiological tension is reduced, and in turn, anxiety is decreased. The progressive relaxation technique consists of tensing and relaxing major muscle groups while paying close attention to the sensations each part of the body. Yeah, in each part of the body. I call this establishing muscle memory. Yeah. You simply tense a particular muscle group for 5 seconds and then release it. You see, this kind of exercise makes you more connected or in tune with that particular body part. Yeah, and this is something that once we master this, we need to teach our children the same thing. Absolutely. They need control of their lives. You see, for sure. When you are more sensitized to your various body parts, you will notice more readily when subtle changes occur. Now, when the beginning of stress starts to affect you, okay, you will notice a change and thus be ready for a detouring plan for evading this stress bug. Right? Like I was talking about antecedent, remember? Antecedent? Yeah. When you're more sensitized to your body parts, you'll know. Like when your hair starts to tingle, you'll know. So, the hair is starting to tingle. I need to do something now. Or something is going to happen. You see? You know? Or your right foot starts tapping. When you're more sensitized, you say, oh, right foot is tapping now. My button must be getting pushed. Let me do something now. Maybe just put my shoes on, get out of the house. Let me just change the topic real quick. Let me just deep breathe and leave or something. If the person doesn't want to keep on, you know, coming at you. Okay? Yeah. So when the beginning of stress starts to affect you, you will notice the change and thus be ready. Absolutely. Catching the stress at this beginning stage prevents any escalation and possible damage internally and externally. Your inner world and outer world will be safer with you knowing how to get the upper hand on stress. You'll be able to kick stress's butt before stress can kick yours. Mm-hmm. The superhero. All right, here we go. The superhero who will save you from the gloom and doom perils of this stress villain will be who? You. So are your cape and tights ready? You will save yourself from misery, depression, rage, anger, fright, violence, and other psychotic behavior that can occur as a result of not catching the stress buildup before it was uncontrollable. You will know just how to cut off the flow of negative energy, thus preventing any behavior that you will be sorry about later. Yeah. It feels good. Yeah, it feels good to be more connected to your body. You will feel healthier in general because you are listening to the small, subtle signs that your body is relating to you. Now, you see, this kind of communication can offset headaches, muscle aches and pains, stiffness, and even digestive issues. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. There are some emotional intelligence fundamentals. First of all, to know yourself. Choose for yourself. Giving of yourself what is called the 6-second pause. Okay? All right. Now, to know yourself. What makes you think? Oh, I'm sorry. What makes you think, act, and feel the way you do? Think about that. What makes you think, act, and feel the way you do? You go outside, you see the birds singing out there, and you know, and you see all the peace and the green grass and blue sky. You know, you around the lake and you see people in the sailboats out there, you know, having a good time. How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel? You see, I remember I talked about this when I was in California, and I would be on the bay, and I would see in the middle of the day and people in sailboats. Right above that, I would see the Bay Bridge. All the tension and stress of people trying to get, you know, from one side of the bay to the other side of the bay, and traffic a lot of times. And the energy is completely different. You see the stress above, you see peace below. Stress above, peace below. I love seeing that. And you ask yourself, do I want to be up there and all that, or down below on the sailboat? Hey, well, the healthy mindset would say the sailboats. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what makes you think, act, and feel the way you do? What parts of your reactions are habitual, and which parts are intentional? What are you afraid of? Oh, yeah. See, feelings are a complex aspect of every person. While research has identified 8 core feelings, again, 8 core feelings, which are fear, joy, acceptance, anger, sorrow, disgust, surprise, and expectation. Okay, those are the 8 feelings, all right? We each experience dozens, even hundreds of variations each day. By the way, another research group has identified their own 8 primary feelings with their own subcategories. They are anger, sadness, fear, enjoyment, love, surprise, disgust, and shame. Well, I'm aligned with the second research group. These emotions blend, merge, and frequently conflict. See? This EQ, now EQ, when I mentioned that before, means basically emotional intelligence, like IQ. Yeah, emotional intelligence. So this emotional intelligence fundamental helps us to understand their causes and effects. It also helps us understand how emotions function in our brains and bodies, and the interaction of thought, feeling, and action. It is important to help your child, okay, your parents out there, with their feeling vocabulary. Oh, yeah, I mentioned that quite a bit. Start introducing different feeling labels as early as possible. Now, when kids can clearly identify their feelings, they will feel better about themselves, and you will know what is going on within them. All right, so even as adults, you know, that's why it's important for us to really know and really know how to verbalize how we feel. You can't just say, I feel crappy, and leave it like that. What does that mean? If you're talking to your mate, how does she or how does he know what that means? You know, after a while, you know, knowing you, I guess they will know. And very important, you know. So, see, the human being follows patterns or neural pathways. On a behavioral level, the neural patterns lead to behavior patterns. At a young age, we learn lessons of how to cope, how to get our needs met, how to protect ourselves. These strategies reinforce each other, and we develop a complex structure of beliefs to support the validity of the behaviors. Now, as we become more conscious of the behaviors we exhibit, it becomes possible to analyze the beliefs and replace them if appropriate, and interrupt the pattern and replace it with conscious behavior that moves us closer to our goals. You see, when we replace the negative patterns consistently, we form new habits. When we form new habits, we actually start establishing new neural pathways in our brain. Oh, yeah, yeah, this is so important. Matter of fact, my next book is going to be about this. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is verified by quantum scientists. Oh, absolutely. Having new neural pathways makes it easier for us to act in our new pattern, because once the brain is reprogrammed, it operates and pushes us toward our new desires. Are you catching this? Man, this is wonderful. This has also proved successful in addiction and recovery programs. Yeah, I went through it myself. Since we know that patterns lead to habits, which are hard to break later in life, we have to instill patterns of positive behavior in ourselves first and then in our little ones. See, the antecedent, remember that, antecedent of the habits we see demonstrated are the patterns of behaviors that were either taught or modeled by the adults or peers in our environment. Oh, man. Good stuff there. Absolutely. I'm telling you, this is why, yeah, right there, you know, that inspired me to come up with my next book here for sure. You know, how we can actually reprogram ourselves for automatic success. Automatic success. Yeah, by establishing new neural pathways in our brain. Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, I might make that a audio program, actually, a 6-CD set. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so be tuned for that one. All right. Now, how do you do what is right for you? How do you do what is right for you? Can you increase your awareness of your actions so that you see their effects? If you were not afraid, what would you do? Oh, fear is a big one. That's a big one. Can you live with doing less than what is right? Can you live with that? Remember, it is in the left prefrontal lobe where this happens. Again, you have to constantly go there. We have to have an uncompromising standard of thoughts and behavior that is life-producing, love-producing, happiness-producing, harmony-producing, and health-producing. That's your standard. You got that? That's your standard. If anything you're doing or saying or thinking is against this, kick it out. Say, it doesn't belong to me. I'm not claiming that. I'm not even going to entertain my brain for that kind of nonsense. Even if you're in the conversations that are against these things, remove yourself. Get them and leave. Let me say that again. We have to have an uncompromising standard of thoughts and behavior that is life-producing, love-producing, happiness-producing, harmony-producing, and health-producing. When these ideals are firmly in place, then we can measure any new energy or emotion that may come our way by our new accepted standards. See, our standards, brothers and sisters, are way too low. Way too low. That's why a lot of us can't achieve what we say we want to achieve. It's a self-image. I talk about that quite a bit. Yeah, the self-image of being, you know, just who knows what, say your self-image wants to become a waitress. And you're a waitress. You do good there. You know, but you're not making much money. You want to make money. So you see what the manager is doing, what she or he is making. So you say, well, I want to be a manager of this restaurant. You see, so some kind of way a job opening comes up and you've been there for several years as a waitress. So you say, I'll apply for this. And you get it. But what happens? You don't really see yourself as a manager. You see yourself as a waitress. Because as a little girl or a little boy, whatever, you saw yourself, you know, working in this fancy restaurant being a waitress. So you become a manager. What happens? You self-sabotage your position. And you drop back down to a waitress. You know? So I'm saying to say that our image, our self-image is way too low. We need to raise our standards up and see ourselves in the new image. See ourselves, you know, accepting and claiming and acting in the new standard. That's how we rise above our challenging situations. Yeah, for sure. Okay? All right, Feelings provide insight and energy, and they are the basis for almost every decision. See, instead of disconnecting our emotions, we need to control our actions so that we have time to make the most creative, insightful, and powerful decisions. Mm-hmm. Particularly when dealing with conflict or stress, we need to slow down the process and apply carefully practiced strategies that lead to decisions informed by the fused powers of heart and mind. This habit of mind stems, you know, from a clear understanding of the consequences of our choices and the ability to imagine the cause and effect relationships. Yeah. One key mechanism to develop and monitor consequential thinking is self-talk. Ooh, I talked a lot about that earlier in early episodes. Man, What are you telling yourself? What have you told yourself today? Huh? What have you told yourself today? How many times have you pumped yourself up and grateful and talking about all the great things that are inside you and grateful to God, or taking away energy, talking about how bad you are, how you're not going to do this, you're not doing that, and just ain't no good and all that. Huh? Has your self-talk today, now it's nighttime now, right? Has your self-talk today been positive or has it been negative? Is it giving you more energy or taking energy away? Okay? Self-talk is a mechanism for mentally exploring multiple options and viewpoints. Here it is. It provides a system to balance the various aspects of our self. Okay? Just as in conversations, as in conversation outside of ourselves, sometimes the louder voice gets attention. You know that's true. The issue in most cases is to develop a process where listening is valued and all the voices, loud and soft, are heard. Man, did you hear that? Man, that speaks to me right there. Yeah, boy. We have to be conscious of the sequential nature of our thoughts. You see, every thought we think is creating our world. So we have to be conscious of the building blocks we are creating. See, one thought leads to another and to another and so on. So what kind of life are you building for yourself? What you currently have is a great place to start. What you have is a result of consequential thinking. So, is it what you want to have as your life representation, or is it something else? Let me read a poem that I saw in my neighbor's office one time. It's an anonymous poem. A lot of y'all might have seen it in your neighbor's, your doctor's offices, okay? Watch your thoughts, for they become words. Choose your words, for they become actions. Understand your actions, for they become habits. Study your habits, for they become your character. Develop your character, for it becomes your destiny. Entitled The Essence of Beauty. Isn't that nice? Yeah. Okay? We'll talk about motivation. Motivation comes from the Latin word movere, which means to move. It is a goal-oriented behavior. In essence, we take action because it feels good to do so. It feels right to take a break when we're on an overload. Yeah. Then it feels right to go back to work. The challenge is to make it feel right to take action that does not have an immediate reward. To do so, we have to tap into that part of ourselves that has a bigger view. We need to both shape unconscious habits and examine priorities to make sure they match. Okay, got that? Yeah. There is positive and negative motivation. The negative perspective says, what do I lose? Or what are the consequences of not doing this thing? Whereas the positive position says, what do I gain by doing this thing? Now, when we focus on the positive side versus the negative side, we are more apt to receive more benefits of the object we are pursuing. Do we get this? Why do we do this all the time? Why do we always focus on what we don't want? We always have the conversation that we don't want, talking about what people don't have, what they aren't doing, and the reality shows we get drawn to that, saying, man, how can she do it to her? And look at what she's doing to him. And blah, blah, blah. We keep zooming in to these innervating programs, draining programs. Drama, drama, drama. Negative, negative, negative. Remember, see, the universe does not hear the negative. If you say, I don't want bad behavior. I don't want anger in my life. I don't want hatred. I don't want revenge in my life. I don't want this bad thinking to cause my marriage to go down too. What the universe hears is not, you know. I'm sorry. Take it back. It doesn't hear not. So we say, I hate bad behavior. Universe hears, I love bad behavior. It turns everything to a yes. Turns everything to a yes. I'm sorry. I had to correct that real quick. Everything turns to a yes. You know? And so anytime you have bad behavior or something you don't like, you know, universe hears that as your dominant vibration. You know? You know? Why do I keep beating up my wife? Why do I keep beating up my husband? Universe hears beating up your husband, beating up your wife. That's dominant. So that's what you tend to do more. Instead of, I'm going to love him like I'm supposed to. I'm going to love him like, I said I would, vice versa. Ah, okay. You'll do more of that. So we always say the thing, talk about what we don't want all the time. Yeah, we focus on the positive side and we get the positive. All right, that's why we should choose optimism, because I'm telling you, that's what universe loves, optimism. Optimism. Yeah, for sure. You feel better. Your heart beats better. Your health is better when you're optimistic. Yeah. Now, we have a thymus gland. Matter of fact, I talked about this before from a purely health perspective. Okay? This has a lot to do with healthy marriages. I'm not off my topic here. A thymus gland. That's located right beyond the sternum, right beneath, actually. And it's the only gland in the body that responds to positive and negative energies from us. This comes from bad food. Bad food is negative energies. You know, you can put just a cigarette, lay it on your sternum and hold your hand against it. Put your arm up and do what's called applied kinesiology or muscle testing. Someone could try, you know, just lightly push your arm down. Your arm will go down every time. You take the cigarette away, do a little tapping there, and just say to me, like, I love myself, whatever, anything positive. You put your hand there and put your arm up there. Someone pushes it down. Your arm stays up every single time. Try it out. Why is that? Because the thymus gland does not like negative energies. And cigarettes, alcohol, white sugar, bad thoughts, thoughts of hatred, revenge, anger. Those all have what's called negative ions to it, and actually shrinks your thymus gland. Your T cells in your body, T stands for thymus. Your T cells come from the thymus. You see, so when your thymus is smaller, you have less T cell production going into your bloodstream. Less T cell production lowers your immune system, because the T cells are your fighter, your warrior cells there. Kills off cancer cells and called antigens. You know, when we have these negative things coming to your system causing a problem there, your T cells have fight it off. All right? But if you have less T cells, that means you have less warriors in your bloodstream. See how this operates now? So if you want to lie and steal and use drugs, you know, adultery and all that, your thymus gland shrinks. Less T cells, you're more likely to get sick. That's a clear connection right there. Clear connection. All right, now you put an apple right there, nice organic apple there, and you put your arm up there. Your arm stays up every time. Good thoughts. So I love myself. I love you. Your arm stays up every time. Absolutely. So your body, see, God designed your body to respond to love, to respond to optimism, to respond to positive thinking and positive talk. God has created you in the most excellent mode. And that's in Scripture. In the most excellent mode. To receive the best, the very best there is out here. The very best belongs to you. Yeah. The very best was created for you, for your service, for your use and enjoyment. The very best. Yeah. So what do you see as far as other people enjoying life or enjoying material gains? Tell yourself, that belongs to me also. I was created to receive those things. That includes best marriage. You might see, happy marriages on TV, not that many these days. Well, you see them on TV sometimes. You might say, well, that's just Hollywood. You know, husbands and wives don't really get along like that because, after all, you never saw it. Now, you can't base possibilities on your experience. I didn't see it either growing up, but let me tell you, I've seen it since then because I believed in the healthy principles of marriage, of how husband and wife are to respond to one another, how to show love, how to embrace one another, how to create love and peace in the house. I embrace those principles. All right? And when I embraced those principles and created my own family in my own mind, I call it my virtual experience, I was gravitated to that when I was in the Oakland, California area. I saw some pioneers who had that. I said, here you go. So I created my own little family in my mind, mother and father and all that. That gave me the new standards. Yeah, for sure. So you can do the same thing. But you have to accept being optimistic. Okay? Yeah. Now, optimism, now hear this, is the strong belief that the best is possible and probable in my life. Again, is a strong belief that the best possible and probable in my life. See, children are born optimistic and tend to stay that way until about the age of, 6 or 7. At that time, life's difficulties impinge enough that the door is open for hopelessness. Yeah, unfortunately. Research suggests that to avoid being trapped in the negativity, people need at least one refuge. Yeah. The refuge can be a person or a practice, such as reading, playing chess, playing music, drawing art, or other art activities that provides positive input. It is remarkable to think that one source of kindness, comfort, or hope is enough to combat the terrible perils that some children experience. See, optimism validates our long-term motivation because it lets us see the future as positive and worthwhile. Yeah. Optimism allows us to see beyond the present and feel good about what may happen. Oh, yeah, for sure. Optimism. Yeah, I wish more of us would be that way. Yeah, smile, enjoy life. Always something, always more to enjoy. You know, let me tell you, Einstein was said to have said at least 100 gratitude statements a day. 100. Now, how many do you say a day? I was in a doctor's office one time, and I was waiting a long time, one of those long days waiting for the doctor there. So I said, I'm going to challenge myself. While I'm sitting here waiting, we're doing nothing anyway. Let me count how many gratitude statements I can make without repeating myself. Well, I came up with 68, actually. I couldn't go beyond that, you know. So challenge yourself. See how many you can make. Yeah, for sure. You can write them down if you want to. Yeah. I'm saying, even in doing that, the process of doing that, you'll feel a positive glow, a positive, aura around you. Because when you live in gratitude, I'm telling you, God is listening and showering blessings on you. Absolutely, yeah. And empathy is another thing, empathy. You know, we need to understand how to be empathic, connectors. Again, empathic connectors. Will the wives love it? The husbands, you can learn to love this too. Empathic connectors. Empathy is the ability to feel with, to recognize and respond to other people's emotions. You see, it is connected to optimism because it is through a sense of our connection to others that we see our own effectiveness and importance. Hear that? When we are empathic, it hurts us to hurt others or to see them hurt. We actually experience for ourselves the emotions of others. It is motivating then not only to do what makes us feel good, but what makes others feel good. Yeah. Thus, empathy is the force which makes the golden rule true. Once people develop empathy on a conscious level, it becomes self-reinforcing because it answers a deep-seated need to connect with others. Man, a lot of our brothers need that more so, but everybody needs this. See, our ego tends to get in the way of us demonstrating empathy at times. Yeah. When you find a person who has a challenge in maintaining an even composure or has a tendency to act before they think or just has an ultra-sensitive emotional makeup, you will find a person that has a challenge of ego getting in the way of their balanced human emotionality. They are too self-centered. Yeah, in their thinking. See, we can mentally block out our frame of reference, the situation as if it were happening to us, our judgments and criticisms. We can emotionally block that out. You know? Now, when we do this and adopt the other person's frame of reference and their point of view, then we can say that we are demonstrating empathy. Yeah. Then we can say that. Okay, for sure. That's a very, very important to understand that. Okay? We're going to close pretty soon here because I was telling everybody last week that, you know, when I was, you know, talking for an hour and a half, that's really, really too long, you know. And I'm going to start making 1 hour discussions. Yeah, for sure. I sip my green tea here and keep talking. But so we're going to end pretty soon. But I'm going to make another point, a little example here. Okay? A little funny example. You know? Here you got Letitia and Monica. Okay? Letitia comes over to Monica's house to visit. Letitia tells Monica what happened to her today. She says, "Girl, you don't know what happened at the library today. Let me tell you. I was studying my political science homework, and Tyrone came over and sat right next to me." See, Letitia obviously likes Tyrone. As she is telling the story, her eyes widen and starts to glow, and she's smiling. Monica jumps in and says, "Oh, yeah? I know Tyrone's cousin, and girl, is he fine. He might go out to a show next week if I can play my cards right. His name is Monroe, and he is majoring in business administration. He walks like Denzel Washington. He has that swag, girl. I can't help staring at him and when he walks down the hall." Now, Letitia's glow starts to diminish and her smile fades. She is wondering if Monica felt her enthusiasm at all and is feeling a little disappointed with Monica. Letitia cuts in and says, "Hey, girl, wait. Hold up here. Here, I'm trying to tell you about my experience in the library with Tyrone, and before I can finish, you start on about his cousin. I thought you were listening to me, but obviously I was mistaken." She rolls her eyes and sucks her teeth, huh? What just happened here is called conversation hijacking. We'll go back to Letitia and Monica, for example, of creating this. First of all, while Letitia is telling her story, Monica is using appropriate body language that says that you have my full attention, girlfriend. She is not on the phone, washing dishes, looking at TV, or thumbing through magazines. She is looking directly at Letitia with interest. Now, after Letitia says that Tyrone came over and sat down next to her in the library, Monica says, "Now, go ahead, girl. What then happened?" "Yeah. And what happened? What did she do? What did you do?" She says next. "Then he gives me his number, asks for mine too, and says that he would love to study with me since we are in the same class." As she flicks her eyelashes several times with her glow growing, Monica almost faints and says, "Wow, haven't you been hoping that he would notice you sometime? Well, haven't you been hoping he would notice you? Now you know that you have been liking him all year long. Your heart must have flipped. Did you pass out?" Do you see the difference this time? Monica kept her feedback and comments on Letitia. And Letitia's feelings did not interject anything that was centered around Monica's feelings or experiences. This way brought about a win on both sides. Letitia wins because her feelings were heard, validated, and supported. And Monica wins because she was successful at demonstrating empathy, making her best friend feel good. See, Monica's ego was never brought in the conversation, and Monica won in displaying a healthy balance of emotions that produce good feelings for everyone. After she notices Letitia's good feelings and she has finished telling her story, then Monica makes the shift to Tyrone's cousin Monroe. At this point, Letitia is satisfied and is willing now to be the empathic friend and connecting friend to Monica. Okay. Got that? All right. Very, very important to understand that because a lot of us, you know, like I said before, most of our brothers have it more than our sisters, but it can be vice versa too because, you know, we have dysfunction on both sides of the fence. All right? Now we're going to kind of stop right there. And I'm Nazim Abdul-Rashid, author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. Okay? And again, like I said at the very beginning, in case those who didn't hear it from the start. Barnes & Noble has it. Amazon has it. My website, www.cloudsofabundance.com. Cloudsofabundance.com. Cloudsofabundance.com. My email, nclub@gmail.com. nrbookclub@gmail.com. By the way, I thank Alfred for having me on this show for sure. My own show, it comes on Saturdays at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's called The Reconnected Show. And since a lot of you like to call and listen on your phone, it's 347, area code, 994-2524. Again, 347-994-2524. I have a different guest to come on. I'm just a host there. So the only time you can really hear, you know, me is on this show. And I play the host, and I'm just directing things and asking the guests the right questions on my show on Saturdays. You can call in and ask questions and be part of that show, too, when I'm not doing rebroadcasts. Okay? Very important to understand that. Got that? All right, wonderful. So I'm going to tune out, but make sure you do that. Get the book. You can get it through my website or Barnes & Noble, but just get it. We need to have a good reference for our behavior. Right now, a lot of us do not have it. Operating from old, worn-out references. Get rid of it. If you're not ready to be married, stay single. Be healthy as a single person. And then when you feel healthy and strong, watch, God will bring you. You'll attract your mate that's also healthy. Yes, yes, yes. Then you can have a nice, wonderful, committed relationship and have a nice marriage there for sure, okay? Everybody got that? All right. So with that, we're going to close the show out. And remember, you know, bring some questions. I love to hear questions and comments from you. A lot of y'all have the book. And I want to, you know, hear what you're getting from it, too, all right? We need to have new references, new script, a new unconscious, new unconscious thoughts from our self-talk that we say to ourselves consistently, to have a new life for ourselves, to believe in the highest part of yourself, not the lower self. Believe in the highest part of yourself, your highest potential, not your lowest. Just make this shift. Make this shift. And when you do, you become a best person that you can be. And you start claiming more. When Allah says, when God says He made you in the most excellent form, you'll say, yes, I was born in the most excellent form. I'm going to start acting like that and cheer everybody I see. Cheer up everybody. Be a light. We can change the world that way. Goodness is on the rise. Yes, as long as we accept it, that reality, and live it in our own life. With that, I'm going to close the show out. With the greetings of peace that only God have, be with you. As-salamu.